Oh, I'm not doing too bad, mate, but as every week, nobody cares about us. Why don't you tell everybody what they care about, which is our sponsors?
Okay, so a massive thank you to CMO Distribution, Schumacher Racing and Wolfspeed. The Cumbers that keep us in every week and give us some prizes at Christmas, so fantastic. Anyway, straight into it. We've been talking a bit off air, so we might as well actually press record and get on with it. The latest S-Work signing of Alan O'Brien. How you doing, mate? You okay?
I'm good, mate. Thanks for having me again.
No, no problems at all. I mean, I know we tried to get you on a couple of weeks to make you the hot topic, but you weren't very well, so here we are a week or so later.
Sorry about that.
No, it's no problems at all, mate. Life gets in the way. It's only a couple of idiots on a podcast. Have you done much running with the new cars?
I've only had one test session so far. Because we've not got anything very local, the closest thing to me is about an hour and a half drive to an indoor track, and it's not your normal type of carpet. So I've been up, done one night with that so far, but it was really good.
Yeah. Oh, cool. Did you have a go with anyone's car before you swapped over? Was there anyone at your club you thought, I'll have a go
no,
with
their
car?
No, I didn't. Jimmy Hamilton races up in Scotland, and the first thing that caught my eye is Jimmy's a very good driver. Jimmy's an ex-Scottish champion, and he's always in the mix in A-finals and there or thereabouts. But he just seemed to jump up a few places very quickly and was putting in top three results in rounds at regionals, and his cars just looked very good. And he caught a lot of people, basically caught a lot of people's eyes with that. And I think, was that his first season on S-Works? Because he'd made the change from PR.
Yeah.
And yeah, that was the first thing I'd seen. So I didn't actually try a car before I changed. You know what, I think in all the times that I've changed since I've started buggies, I don't think I've ever tested somebody else's car before doing it.
Just like the leap of faith.
Yep, that's it.
Yeah, so that would have been what, jumping from Team C to S-Works, Schumacher originally?
Yeah, I don't think I tried a Schumacher. No, I usually, do you know, when you're leaving, it's generally you know somebody in a team and you'll speak to them and you'll say, any sponsor chat aside, I want your real opinion on your new team or your car, and you go from there. You, if you know somebody well enough, you'll get an honest answer off the record from somebody, what they think.
Yeah. So
what was the build like? Oh, sorry, go on, Chris.
I was going to say, when you spoke to... was it just Jimmy you spoke to about it then, or was it like...
No, I spoke to Jimmy, I spoke to the Chapels, spoke to Jörn Neumann about his, and they were all complimentary of them, so there wasn't anything bad fed back to me at all, really, on these things. And then I'm friends with Moritz Lautenbach as well, and he's now announced that he's joined S-Works, but I know he tested one and really liked it.
Yeah, obviously that's Moritz from LRP.
LRP, yeah.
Yeah, I think they're building quite a nice little team, aren't they now? S-Works, obviously headed by sort of Jörn on the 10th side, Elliot on the 8th side. They haven't really got a bad...
You've got Canas on that 8th side as well, and then you've got Misha Widmeyer on the 10th side and the 8th side, but Canas and Boots are pretty formidable force on the 8th side.
Yeah, I mean, they haven't really got a bad car, have they? Like, it's a very strong overall package.
Yeah, I mean, one thing Jimmy was really complimentary about is how strong they are, like, durability-wise, which I've not managed to test myself yet. I thought about going to Nîmes at the weekend, but I hadn't bought any of my spares yet. Like, I had my cars and I'd built them, I'd test them, but I hadn't bothered. Like, you know yourself, when you race at like nationals or so on, you maybe carry more spares than most people do because you need almost a bit every part of the car. So I hadn't bought everything. I thought, I'm not going down to Nîmes and breaking something, even though Jimmy had said it's super strong. The thought of going down there wouldn't have probably been any other S-Works drivers racing on the day unless the Chapels were there. And I'm not even sure if they were there. So I thought, do you know what? Give that one a miss and do that. But yeah, from durability point of view, I believe they're very strong.
Yeah. And of course, they all seem to perform very well. Like, I mean, obviously it was only down to a bit of, I don't want to say Ewan bottled it, but it was definitely the car to beat in both two and four wheel drive at the Euros this year.
Oh yeah, I mean, I watched that from home in the track, and I wouldn't even said you're involved. It was just, it's just how racing goes sometimes, I think. With it, it is what it is. That car looked excellent at the Euros. I thought it looked excellent in the Worlds as well, to be honest.
Yeah.
So,
and of course, yeah, if you ever fancy a little dabble in eighth, you know it's a proven platform there as well.
Yeah, like I have had a dabble in eighth, which I enjoyed, and I would probably like to do that again, which is good to know that there's a car there that's proven and winning a lot of things. I mean, it was probably only four or five in the last 5 years that Canas won the Euros B, and now he's right up there at the top of the world. So, yeah. Can't fault the car.
Awesome. Yeah. And are you looking forward to being able to ask Ashley Patterson for all the help in the world each and every week?
I love Ash. He's a good guy. He's always chatty in our group message and so on. And he's always eager to help. So, good one to have around. I need all the help I can get. You know what it's like when you change manufacturers and you're learning new cars and you're learning all these little things that maybe aren't, I don't know, in a manual, like we use one shim here instead of the two that the manual say, or we do this or we do that. Like, that's what those kind of teammates are really helpful for.
Yeah, of course. And I think I get the impression it's quite a small UK team, but also probably quite quite close-knit.
It seems that way, and I don't think that's a bad thing. Sometimes that's a better way to be, at least the core being small and you're all sort of singing from the same hymn sheet, so to speak, and not all the information changing throughout the team, or you're not hearing what's going on. So yeah, that's a good thing.
Do you think they're looking to make a bigger scene now? Because I mean, obviously we've all seen they've got quite good cars now on the 10th side. So do you think they're looking for drivers, or do you think more are going to come now? It's it wasn't a decent car before, but now, you know, the two wheel drive car looks flipping epic on the Euro. When I was watching the Euros, it looked so easy to drive.
Yeah, I would imagine so. I mean, being a European brand, obviously they've got some really good drivers throughout Europe, and like Clément Boda, and then they've got like that Antonio Kowalski, and so on, all through Europe. They've built their Europe team, but I think there's definitely plenty of potential to build a decent UK team as well and build it up. I said when I joined that I'd like to sort of build more of a team. So we've now got myself and Jimmy up in Scotland, but I would like to build a bit more behind that. My dad was one of the first people to mention S-Works, even probably when I still had 6-7 months left on my Schumacher contract. My dad was like, have you never fancied S-Works? Because my dad had kind of stopped racing, and he likes what he'd call the underdogs, because they're not as well known. My dad loves to race them, and he's like, well, if you ever go there, he's like, I'll race again, I'll get a new car. And it's true to his word, the moment I got my cars, he got himself a four-wheel drive and is dead keen on racing again.
Oh, brilliant. So is he going to pick up the sticks again?
Yeah, that's it. He done one or two meetings last year. Towards the end of the year, he was starting to get interest back, but now he's got his S-Works bill, got himself a nice new pro-painted shell, dead excited about the season ahead. So yeah, that's great. That makes three of us now up here, and maybe I can get, maybe we can grow the team a bit more up here. I mean, who knows?
Oh, that's cool, man. That's really cool. He's racing again.
Yeah,
nice. I suppose it's nice for you to have your not just travelling around as like a bit of a pit man there. You got a bit of, you know.
Well, that's the thing. He didn't even travel around as my pit man. That's the thing. He didn't. So it's good to have him there racing, and it is helpful to have somebody else there, because our regional days are fast paced, because it's two classes on a day. My dad only races one class. So even if it's just could you go get food from somewhere? I've got no time. It's even helpful for that, but it's good to see him racing again and enjoying it.
Yeah. I mean, I know you said off air that you came from like an on-road background. We were talking about a few things.
Yeah.
I've just been having a look at what cars they actually do. And I mean, I know it's an expensive class, but they do a 1/8 on-road car as well.
Yeah, well, Jorn, obviously, Jorn just won the Worlds for that.
Yeah.
Couple of weeks, is it a week ago in Australia?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I came, well, prior to on-road, I wrote, my RC journey began in 8th scale nitro stock cars on oval. That's what I started with, and I raced them for years before I went into touring cars. But predominantly, I would say touring cars is my background and my style of driving. I think if anybody watches me, they can see that with me. Craig Collinson was one of the biggest influences on me driving wise and off road, and he used to always say, "You drive so neat and tidy, and it's so neat, and do 5 minutes." He's like, "But from point to point, you need to push that stick harder." That's what he used to always say. You need to accelerate harder, point to point. He's like, "You're just too smooth." He used to tell me, "Your touring car, you just drive far too smooth." And he was right, because as soon as I stopped doing that, I got better results.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just looking at some of the pictures of the new kit, and I tell you what, I mean, it all looks, you know, really, really high quality. You know, you can see that the design's been thought out, so...
Yeah. You know. I mean, the one thing I'll say, when I went up for the testing night, I spoke to Jorn, I said, "What are you running setup-wise?" He showed me what setup sheet he was running from an EOS last year. I put it on the car with like a couple of tiny changes just to do with like diff oil, because I know what the track I was going is like, and it's quite tight. And I never changed the setup all night. I didn't touch a thing, not one thing on the car. It just went.
Yeah. I mean, it just seems like they haven't done anything like mega groundbreaking.
Yeah, there's nothing radical.
But what they have done is they seem to have looked at the best bits from the best cars around, and just kind of very cleverly just put them all together quite neatly.
Yeah, and I would think that's probably what most manufacturers do. I mean, imitation is the sincerest form of flattery, but there's obviously a ceiling as far as engineering and groundbreaking stuff goes. You're going to plateau eventually, which I would say we're getting very close towards in both classes. That ceiling is close for revolutionary stuff.
Yeah,
I think about that.
I think until somebody a bit, I think it's a bit like, my opinion of it, it's a bit like when we first had mid-mounted for the two-wheel drives.
Yeah.
I think we'd hit quite a plateau with the rear-wheel drive stuff. You know, I mean, how are you going to really improve on like the B5, I think the B5 rear was quite a good car for a rear motor car. It obviously had a lot of hard work following the B4. The Schumachers had by then got some good rear motor cars, same with Yokomo. And then somebody just turned around and went, "Oh, we'll put the motor in the middle."
And then obviously it just destroyed everything when it was high grip. And then when it went low grip, they were useless. But in high grip, they destroyed everything.
Yeah, and now they've kind of all been refined to the point now where mid-motor is, it's faster everywhere now. They've all kind of been refined. So I think we're at the point of sort of, if you go back to the mid-motor change, we're at kind of that B4, B5 period where what can we really do now to make these mega fast? And I think that's why you don't see very many new cars now. Like, you see more of as a 0.1 variations of in the S-Works, they're the dash.
Mm-hmm.
I think you just got to see.
And there's like an evolution. I think it's like being an S, a two-wheel drive, and then an Evo, and you get like evolutions of cars. But I don't know if you watched the Worlds, and a lot of people were almost disappointed when Mugen released their car. They were expecting something revolutionary, and I was replying to chat saying, "Well, what do you expect? I mean, everyone is so fast just now with the current platforms that they're running. Why would they move away from that?"
Yeah, like why reinvent the wheel?
Exactly, they're already there. Why would they move away? And they're like, "Oh, well, it looks like a B6 on this side, and it looks like a TLR at the front." And I'm like, "Well, they're two very good cars."
Yeah.
It would make sense.
If it's working, build that.
Well, I mean, yeah, it's like, what, do you want them to make something revolutionary that doesn't handle very well? Well, why? Why would they do that?
I mean, they've done that before. they've done that before, haven't they? When I know Durango did it with the 210F, Kyosho did it with their version where they had the four-wheel drive rear end shaft and a motor. And why are they not here anymore? Because they didn't work.
Exactly. And or they were suitable in very narrow windows.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Yeah, so I mean, yeah, I think there's gonna be some mega change coming, but what it is, I don't know.
Because, like, the only thing I could think of off the top of my head, right, and purely the reason that I don't ever see them doing this is affordability. I reckon one of the only places that one of those forward motors, like the Kyosho one you're talking about, could be potentially faster is on car picks. I don't know if you remember when X-Ray released their first two-wheel drive, it was the four-wheel drive with a kicked-up front end.
Yeah.
And it was extremely fast on carpet. But I had that car, and when you took it off carpet and put it anywhere else, it was super hard to drive. So then what are manufacturers going to do? Well, they're going to have a dirt car, an Astro car, and then this carpet car with the forward motor. What Joe Bloggs is going to be able to afford three variations of a car? It makes no sense.
No. And I know we do tend to go back indoors and race a bit more carpet in the summer. And if, you know, but does it justify for the 3-4 months
unless you're going to race your world championships on carpet, which I don't ever particularly see happening. I mean, the one in Japan when it was on AstroTurf, I mean, it was snooker table smooth, that track, apart from the little features and then the bigger jumps, but all the rest of it, it wasn't. Yutabi had the other arena next door that was amazing, and I remember thinking, why are you running on this one? Like, the one next door is like such a good off-road track, and then they ran on that one. I just never, like, unless they're planning on running Worlds on carpet, which I don't ever see that being a thing, then there'd be no reason for companies to be doing that. There's no reason at all.
You say never a thing. We're doing a Euros on a carpet.
This is true. I know I've been debating, like, I'd like to go to it, but also part of the thing with the Euros, if you go, I like to treat them almost as a holiday, so you're like outdoors and enjoying the weather as well, if you get what I mean. So when you're not racing
in
March, then
Sweden in September, you're not enjoying the weather.
Yeah, but if it wasn't an indoors, they'd have probably ran it possibly earlier. Who knows? Or they wouldn't have ran it in Sweden. Who knows? But you know what I mean? If you're going to go to Euros and they're doing it in places like Spain and that, part of the attraction is you're outdoors in Spain and getting a bit of sun and chilling. Like, do you know when people have went to the Euros in Italy and they get like a wee villa and it's got a pool, and it's almost like a mini holiday as well.
Yeah, that was good fun. It was. I mean, to be fair, I didn't mind the Euros in the Netherlands. Just wish it was maybe just ran a bit better. But
yeah, no, I mean, like, I watched all of it. Like, as much as I love racing, I love watching racing. So if I'm not at a Euros, I always watch anything like 8th Worlds, 8th Euros, any 10th big meetings I can't make. I watch them. I love watching racing. I just like racing in general.
Yeah. So you've got the cars.
Yep.
Was there anything nice any nice little touches you found in the build that you quite liked? Any?
I think off the top of my head, the four wheel drive having shafts was great. it was just a nice build. It's just nice when everything, do you know, when a build goes together and everything is nice. Because this won't cause offence now, but when I raced for Team C and I first opened the kits and I was building them and realised that the hinge pins were held in with E-clips, I was like, oh, this is really strange.
90s calls.
I was like, yeah. It was so strange.
Yeah. Did you have to do much like, you know, when you take the part off the sprue and it doesn't quite fit and it's...
Yeah, no, so that's what I was going to say. No, that's the thing. There was no fettling on any parts. That was the one thing. There was nothing that was like... I tell a lie. There was one... I had to use the arm reamer on a pair of arms just to free that up slightly. And I think that's normal for 90% of cars. So yeah, couldn't fault it.
You'd prefer to have them come a bit tighter, wouldn't you? And after,
oh yeah, I mean, you don't like
to be sloppy.
A lot of people, it's a bit of a misconception. You might hear people when they build a new car and they'll be like, oh god, this is so sloppy. And I'm like, you'd prefer it like that, because if you had a car that was fully tight, it would just be undrivable.
Yeah,
all those bits of slop contribute to your car being easier to drive. So yeah, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but obviously there's a limit. Like, there is a limit to where you're like, yeah, this is too much. But no, I didn't have to fettle anything really, which was great. I can't really complain at that at all. So no complaints on that side.
What comes in the box with the two-wheel drive? Did you have to buy many options? Did you get, sorry, both gearboxes, like a lay down and a lay back and stuff like that? Or
in the two-wheel drive, it's separate kits for dirt and carpet, but it's because there's more than just a gearbox. There's different shock towers, different shock bodies and everything. I think they're all longer to do with obviously droop and center of gravity changes.
Yeah.
Regarding option parts, so the one thing, the carpet car does come with roll bars front and rear ready for carpet. It doesn't come with like the alloy parts that you would expect to have to upgrade. I've put on it myself, like a brass pivot block, the front and rear camber plates. Yeah. I've upgraded them, caster blocks. But in general, I only upgrade these for a bit of strength. But when it comes to the dirt car, I won't upgrade those bits, because for me, anything plastic flexes more and generates more grip. So on the dirt model, I'm very unlikely to upgrade any of those parts and probably run it as it is out the box.
Oh, cool. Obviously, you want it a bit lighter as well for when you're in the wet.
Yeah.
Yeah. How about electronics? Where are you with that? Do you stay Hobbywing, or have you changed electrics as well?
Yeah, signed for Absema, which I've ran previously when I ran for Team C about 7 or 8 years ago. I loved that stuff back then. From my initial testing with it again, still really like it. They've changed their ESCs since I was last there. But now they cover batteries, ESCs, servos and motors. So they've got me completely covered throughout the whole car, and all of it is excellent. I cannot fault it at all. I don't actually know, to be honest, who stocks it in the UK, but I believe Freddie Russell was trying to bring it in. I've also been taken on by Freddie. Freddie's now a shop sponsor for me as well. So I'll be getting like my tyres and so on through Freddie.
And your glue and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah.
You can't fault the glue.
No, do you know, I messaged Freddie when I first used it and was like, this is not the same viscosity as normal glues. This is a bit thicker and it's just different. I was like, do you know, I've taken so long getting used to thin glue, I'm going to have to readjust again, get used to this stuff, because it's like, I never used to be able to glue tyres up with thin glue. I ended up wearing more of it than I ever managed to get in the tyres. Nowadays, I've got it perfected. So going back to a thicker glue, it was like, oh, I've got a lot more time with this stuff now. But I said, it's great for that. It'll be perfect for things like, one thing I hated thin glue was stuff like cut staggers, because it would run around the wheel and you would only need a fraction too much and it would leak out. And it's like, I've ruined many a pair of jeans with glue. Horrible.
It's when it gets on the jeans and it has that chemical reaction
it
and then burns your leg.
Smokes.
I've got a scar just above my right knee where that happened, when I was sat there gluing and it dripped. And you're like, why is my leg burning?
You don't notice until your leg starts burning.
Yeah, you don't realise. And then because it's glue, like the little bit of hair on your leg under where it's stuck to that, and you also, so it's not only burnt, you've just then ripped the burnt flesh off.
Yes, honestly, I remember the first time I tried to use the glue, and it's like you put a bit in and you're like, I don't think any went in, a bit more, and I'm still not sure. And then before you know it, it's all leaking out the bottom. You've just put loads and loads of glue through the tyre. It takes a bit of getting used to using thin glue, but I'm glad that Freddy's is like, Freddy's glue seems to feel like somewhere in between like thin and medium glue. It's like, this is a very, yeah, it's different. Really different, yeah. But it's good. It's good stuff.
I use it, and I think it's in the bottle, it just looks like watery, like any.
It absolutely does look the same in the bottle. That's 100%.
As you squirt it on, it's like it kind of it runs, but it doesn't run away.
Oh, nowhere near the speed. You can take your time with it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
And I think you've got a nice. If you get a nice thin tip on the bottle, you can just put a nice bead round. And you, if you get a nice fluid motion, that's it. You just do that. It stays there. It dries. You know, I think it takes a little bit longer to dry naturally than some of the thin stuff. But
it will. But you'll get a better bond. You always get a better bond with that kind of stuff.
You get a really good. It sticks really well to the rim, and then comes off. I've just been having a look at some of your Absema stuff that you're running. I thought the servos look very nice.
They're really good. Those are new servos that just came out like a month ago. And when I first seen them, and I thought, wow, the price is so reasonable for a fast servo.
Yeah.
And it's a beautiful looking servo, and it works great. It really is good.
Yeah. I mean, they've got a nice spread of the competition servos, haven't they? I mean, you've got them all the way from sort of around the, I mean, this is all in euros. You can get some that are down at like 50, 60 euro.
Yeah. I mean, the top of the range one is like super cheap. I can't remember if I've got it here in front of me. I'm just having a look myself.
The brand new MKS top of the range one's 169 euro.
So those ones are the old ones. See the MKS ones? They're the old ones. They've been superseded by, I think it's the 89.95 euro ones. So the ST23 DBF is the one I'm running.
ST23 DBF. Oh yeah,
that's what I'm running in my cars.
Yeah, very nice.
And 89 euros for a top of the range servo is pretty cheap in comparison to some of them these days. I mean, even at KO, I think you're looking at like 140 these days.
They're all around that now.
Because that's what I ran the whole time I was at Schumacher. I ran KO the whole time, and they were excellent. I never faulted them, but I was really impressed with these Absema servos. Really, really impressed, and at that price, that's excellent. So,
yeah. That's something. Sorry, Russ, but I've just seen something that's really interesting that I really want to understand. They're programmable servos.
Because if you look further down, there's a programmer on it as well.
You plug in your thing to like this little USB box, and you can plug your servo into your computer and program it.
So what can you program on that? Punch.
I'm just having a look there.
See, the one thing I will say is for that ST23, and now if you're thinking of a like maybe 90 euros, 90 pound servo, at 6 volts, it's a 0.06 speed.
Yeah.
Which is fast.
That is really
fast. It's probably too fast for most people.
And then if you crank it up to the 7.4, it drops to 0.05, which is pretty insane, actually.
Yeah. They're nice.
So what can you just in the programming, Chris? Come on, get the manual out.
I'm having a look. I can't read as fast as you talk.
Can you adjust
the I do not have a clue. Program all yes with USB.
I think you can program.
Here it is. I found it. Servo angle, servo neutral, damping factor, the frequency power of it, and the sensitivity of it.
So it's basically like a motor probe. It's basically like how a speed controller controls your power motor. You can change all the settings on it, so the motor either is softer at one bit, further on the next bit. You see, now that's an innovation that not many people have seen.
And there's a bit in it to enable Sanwa SSR high speed mode if you've got Sanwa, it says as well.
Yeah.
You run a Sanwa still, mate.
Yeah, I am. I was testing the Futaba handset. I really like the Futaba handset. There's one thing I don't like. On the Sanwa and the Futaba, when you brake, you've got like a harder spring.
Yeah.
You can change it on the Sanwa. You can move the pin and it makes it the same as forward. Can't do that on the Futaba. I really don't like the harder brake spring.
I quite like that.
Do you? See, I don't. I think it must depend on the way you use your thumbs on the sticks. So I use the tips of my thumbs and I always feel like it's going to slip off with a harder spring. Like I almost can't push it hard enough the way I hold my thumbs. I think that's the only reason.
I think I must just be a bit of a brute force oaf, but yeah, I like the difference in feel. Like I always feel I want more feeling from the brakes than I do from the throttle.
Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people are probably the same reason, and it's probably why they come out the factory like that. I remember when, I think it was Brian Preddy told me you could change it. I was like, oh, great, what'd you do? He was like, just take the back off, move this pin. And I'm like, oh, brilliant, moved it. It's great.
Is that what you were doing at Telford at the Zoom when you had your transmitter in a million bits?
No.
At the Zoom,
I was standing in the queue for practice, and so where the spring attaches on your throttle and brake,
yeah,
the plastic bit snapped, so I had no spring.
I remember looking in your tent that day and your transmitter was in that mini part.
Yeah. Yeah, the whole bit snapped, so I had to run back, grab Stevie Sheridan's, reprogrammed it to my car, and then got out for my practice. And when I came back, it wasn't as if when it opened up I could just reattach the spring. The hook that it hooks onto had snapped off, so I was like trying to find the tiniest like screw I could, and I eventually like screwed it into a bit of plastic, reattached the spring, but it was like a DIY job before I could get the bit. Lasted the whole meeting.
Yeah.
And I got home and ordered the parts. But there's not, honestly, the feeling of that snapping while you're waiting to go up for your practice, I was like, ah, oh, and with that weather, ah, oh, you've got to be joking. Today of all days, absolutely tipping it down. There was like, even when I got it back together later in the day, I could see water under the LCD, and I'm like, ah, oh, this is just a horrible day that was, eh?
Yeah.
What a day that was.
Yeah, what was really horrible was I kept having to go and help sweep the track, which was lovely.
Oh yeah, I'd done that a few times as well. I remember sweeping the track. So I remember going to Kidderminster for a national a few, like probably 5 years ago. Nice, lovely, sunny day. Went to bed, woke up, and there was just snow outside. Everything was covered in snow, and I was like, "Wow!" Got to the track, and I spent like. I was one of the ones straight out with a brush that I'm sweeping. It's like, you think I'm going home today? I've drove too far, spent too much money on hotels. This track's getting swept. We're racing.
absolutely
soaking through to the, like, your socks are soaking and everything. But no, we got racing. I just couldn't believe it. It's sunny the day before, wake up and there's like snow everywhere through the night. It's crazy. I'm pretty sure it was like round one of the national, so it must have been in like late March, early April. It was really strange weather.
Yeah. So, where's your first meet with the new cars?
Well, I thought it would be the next round in Nîmes, but I think it might be Durham. Along with racing these days, I still play ice hockey, but I'm also an ice hockey official, a referee, and I'm starting to get through the levels and get a bit higher up. So I referee a lot of weekends, and they're pushing me up through the levels at the moment, and they wanted me to referee on the day that the next Nîmes was. So I said, yeah, I'll do it. But like, even to give you an example, I mean, an ice hockey game probably lasts anything from an hour and a half to 2 hours. And like this Saturday, I am reffing four games back-to-back in Aberdeen. So I have to be in Aberdeen for like 2-3 o'clock this Saturday, and I'll be reffing from 4 p.m. till about 10:30 back-to-back without a break. So I'm like reffing constantly, and Aberdeen's like a 2.5 hour drive from me as well.
Yeah,
that's mental, mate. So is have you been racing at Glasgow much?
During the year.
Yeah,
during the year, obviously that's my local track. It's great. I mean,
they got a winter series on.
I think we're finished. Yeah. I think we're finished for the year. I'm a fair weather racer when it comes to the winter. I mean, I know the 8-footer hardy guys that go out racing in the winter, but fair play to them, because if I can't feel my thumbs when I'm racing, I'm not into it. Ideally, with the way the weather is and where we are in the year, I was saying to my dad just the other day, if we can get one dry weekend where the weather's above 5 degrees, we'll go do some testing at Glasgow with the four-wheel drives, give them a run. I think Durham have got a round of their winter series mid-November. I think that might be my first meeting. I think because they're new cars, I'll probably only do one class wherever I race in a winter series, unless I was going to Worksop, which I might get one or two Worksops in but at the moment it'll be either Nîmes or Durham. Problem with Worksop is, and it's the same with everything at the moment, money's going up. So I think I worked out a Worksop's going to cost me anywhere from 350 to 500 for a weekend.
Oh, don't be vulgar.
So it ain't cheap.
Yeah, I know.
It ain't cheap.
Yeah.
And of course, if it's Durham, one of your last meetings there was quite a success for you, wasn't it?
Yeah, the F2s. So, and I like the Durham, the guys that run Durham are like Paul Ainscow, Matt Gill, Dave Dunn. They're some of my best mates in the hobby. So I really enjoy going down there. Their winter series.
Okay, listen, so we lost a little bit of the show here when my computer wonderfully decided to shut down on us. So we'd just spoken to Alan about the F2 finals. And he was just talking about someone that took him out. So we're going to rejoin about there. So are you off there now? Come on.
So just to make it clear, David Snee from Newcastle.
Did he?
Yeah, was it, my good friend.
Did he laugh when he did it?
It was a good
and
butchery.
If anybody wants the video proof, I've got it.
It was a good butchering.
It was a proper butchering, like.
Yeah, I was marshalling it, and I saw it. I think it was me that marshalled you, wasn't it?
It might well have been me, actually.
It was a proper, like, don't even pretend that he's there.
And the thing was, like, Snee's one of my good mates, and I give him shit about this constantly, and I tag him in things and memes and stuff about it on Facebook. And I must admit, when I came off the roster, I was like, the first thing he said to me is, I couldn't do anything. And I said, I was like, you could have not hit me. Like, that was an option.
At least you were speaking. Last time Chris had me off, we didn't speak for 3 weeks and we had a 2-hour drive home.
Oh, man. I know.
I still maintain that, you know,
that you ran out of time.
You just weren't going around the corner fast enough.
Snee's competitive. He's one of my good mates. We're competitive. He knows fine well now I'm due on one, so next time I have him off, he'll have nothing to complain about, and that'll be at reset again. It was good. It was good. I was enjoying the finals with him. We were having good races. But it would have been easier to take if when he'd hit me, I hadn't got stuck. But because I got stuck, that kind of ended my race because it was towards the end. And the thing is, I did manage to rag my way to the back off him again, but it was too late. Obviously, you get in that sometimes that mode when you've been taken out, you drive super fast, but yeah, it was just too late.
So he didn't wait for you and he didn't let you pass when you caught him?
No, it didn't wait. Wow. Didn't wait.
To be fair though, Snee should have won that meeting by a mile. He was the fastest thing there by an absolute mile. The only problem was there was 13 corners on the track and every lap he was crashing on two of them.
That's the thing. I think when you break down tracks, there's some tracks where you can just go super fast, but that's going to happen. And I think that was one of those tracks where you almost had to drive at about 80% to do 5 minutes. Because when I was, like I said, when I got put out and I put the hammer down, I checked lap times and stuff. I think I had the fastest lap time of the day, but it was just, you couldn't drive like that for 5 minutes around that track. It just caught you out too much. Because I could see it in the heats. Like, I could see Snee super fast at barrel rolling off in the tricky parts because it was tough. It was one of the ones, those tracks that rewarded you for being daring on a fast lap, but it really punished you as well.
Yeah, I mean, when I looked at my lap times, you always know roughly which laps you've pushed on, don't you, when you look at the sheet?
Yeah.
And you look at it and you think, oh, Christ, for those 5 laps, I was absolutely ragging the wheels off it. Like, I was giving it everything I'd got. And you look and you're like, it was a tenth of a second faster than the times. I thought it wasn't slow.
It wasn't how my two-wheel drive day ended with me winning the F2 Championship. But it's not how it's...
a nice photo.
It's not how it started, though. I went out in the first practice and I thought, oh, I'm going okay, don't feel... that racy. Ryan and that looked pretty quick, and I'm like, I don't feel very racy. And I went to the lap times and I was 2 seconds off the pace over a full lap, and I was like, oh shit. I'm like, that's a lot. I'm going to make some drastic changes here, and I end up like tires and setup, and I went back out for the next practice and I caught a load up. But see, when I started off with 2 seconds off the pace, I mean, that's one of those head scratchers where you felt like you weren't fast, but you didn't feel 2 seconds off the pace slow. This could be a long day. Thank God for that. But four-wheel drive. What was that? What were you saying, Russ?
I was just no, going, what car does David Snee drive? Was he Schumacher as well?
Schumacher was a teammate. Yeah, he was a teammate. Oh, friend, teammate.
It's always lovely when you take a friend and a teammate out. Though, ask Jason Green.
Oh, man. I'll give him a good ribbon about it, though.
What are your plans into next year then? Have you tried to get in for the MKGP?
I have, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So this last year, a lot of people know, I think I'd done 2 nationals last year and then pulled out the rest, and I didn't race for like 8 months. I had a lot of stuff going on, like family issues at home, and my head wasn't in the right place to race last year. Like, I couldn't race last year. The season before previous, when I took the 8 months out. So I missed that MKGP, but this one, applications in, and we'll just have to see. I'd like to do it. It's one of those ones where I'd like to make a weekend of it, maybe with family and stuff. I really enjoyed doing the MKGP, but a lot of people enter. I don't even know how many people enter. Was it limited to 400 people entering, but only half that amount getting places or something like that?
I think it was 170 per class, wasn't there, on the 2-wheel drive, and then Sunday
was there.
Yeah, and then the 4-wheel drive was that, but it was split between 4-wheel drive and trucks.
Yeah.
Something like that.
And I think there was up to, on the BRCA side, I'm pretty sure there was up to 1,000. You could have up to 1,000.
Up to 1,000 people trying to get an entry.
Per entry. I don't know what it is of late. I think it was well into the 200-300s per class.
I think it closed last night.
Yeah, well, I mean, last time I checked, it was up into the 200 or 300s per class. So I would assume if it closed last night, you'd have had a lot of last minute people.
Yeah. Well, hopefully, I mean, all I can do is wait.
UK's as well, isn't it? Because all the international people, like either Quayle or any Americans, they have to enter by email. So.
Yeah, so it's. It's a big event, and to be honest, I think it is a great event for the industry. It shows everything very public. You get a lot of people becoming interested in the sport because of it. I mean, I've never been to one where at some point you didn't have like 2 or 3 people deep.
Yeah, it's a great spectacle for the sport, mate. 100%.
Oh, it was brilliant. I've showed like the wife and my son who loves it as well. Like, I've showed them pictures of like 3 people deep around the barriers, and then you've got, if you want to go up for like a coffee and something to eat, and you get a cracking view from the shop above. Was it Marks and Spencer's or something that's there?
John Lewis,
that's it. And you get a cracking view from their coffee shop as well. It's great.
Is your lad still doing some driving, mate? I remember seeing you.
So he's been doing the odd bit here and there. My son now, with me playing ice hockey and stuff, he's got into playing ice hockey pretty competitively now. Yeah. And he goes to like Scotland national development camps and stuff. He's only 8, but his hockey career's kind of taken over because he's become so good so quickly. Our focus is on his hockey. Like I say, because I play hockey, referee hockey, and he plays hockey, I spend most of my time in an ice rink. So I think I said to you earlier, obviously, I'm refereeing 4 games in Aberdeen this weekend.
Yeah.
But so, like, my Saturday, I don't know if my wife will take her, if I'll go along, but if not, my Saturday will consist of my son having training at 8:45 till 11:30. And then I'm reffing games like 4 till 10 in Aberdeen. And then on the Sunday, he has Scottish National Development Camp in Dumfries from 1 till 5. So that's my whole weekend in an ice rink. That's my weekend this weekend. That is it. There's nothing else.
Mate, that's wild.
So, yeah, my whole life like kind of revolves around ice rinks. And then racing. That is it. But he likes to come. That's the thing. He loves his racing. And he came when I went testing with the S-Works. He came with me, and he asked to bring his car. And he hadn't used his car in maybe 3-4 months. And I let him bring his car. He drove really well, and he wants to do a bit of racing. And I've said that's fine, but I've said his focus is still going to be on his hockey, predominantly. So yeah, that is where we are at with his racing as well.
Class, mate.
But he will be racing Schumacher for the foreseeable future because I cannot afford another car at the moment. So
I always thought you'd be factory. Like, they sent you like 10 cars to get you going. Now, you know,
that would have been lovely.
Brilliant, mate. All right, have you got anything for the Hall of Fame? Oh, I know we didn't prime you earlier. Is there anything interesting you want to put into our RC Hall of Fame?
What is it you usually put in it again? What is this again? I can't even remember this.
Like brushless systems, anything RC that you think is cool.
RC.
That I think's cool.
Can't have Neil Craig using it about 7 times already.
Is he?
It's just literally, it's just getting to the point where it's just him in a room on his own.
My favourite, probably memory from RC is the associated TC3. That should go into the Hall of Fame.
Yeah. That definitely should go into the Hall of Fame.
That's a nice choice, right off the top of your head. Well done.
Yeah.
Do you want to tell us?
Because it was, the reason being, CML was my first ever sponsorship in the on road days. Craig, the way my sponsorship came about, Craig Drescher used to go around the shops as the rep.
Yeah.
And when he was in Scotland, he'd race. And I managed to beat him at my local club. And after that, I got a CML drive. In fairness to Craig, we raced 2 clubs that week. I won one and he won one. So it was 1-1.
Don't talk about the other one.
Yeah, you only talk about the one you won.
Do you remember when I won that Westfield Regional?
So that's where my drive came from. Class, and mate. What I actually did recently was I managed to find a TC3 unbuilt kit. On the internet, and I built it, and I put all the period electronics in from when I raced Craig, and they say I've still had the shell and so on, so I've got all that now in my garage, all on the shelf. It's, I think, because it was like my first drive and everything, and my favourite touring car when I raced, it's one thing I've always loved. I've always loved the TC3.
That's cool. It was really one of the my personal opinion. I know the touring cars now are much faster, much more, you know, sort of racy looking, and they've got all the flex stuff and everything. But that was the heyday of touring cars. Well, that was
the class changer, wasn't it? The TC3 was the one that took people away from buggy racing to go touring car racing.
Well, no, it wasn't just that. I mean, that was when Drescher had sort of stepped away from buggies for a little bit. He was still doing some buggies, but his main class was on road. And you just had him and Spashit going at it at every big meeting. And obviously Spashit was running the Lossy. I think it was the double X, triple XTC would have been about that kind, about that time.
Wasn't that the Street Weapon? Wasn't that what they called it?
No, Street Weapon was like the more, I think, if I'm right, I'm sure
the Street Weapon was around the same time as the TC3, because Martin Wallace up here that I used to battle with raced the Street Weapon, but
I think wasn't the Street Weapon like the namey type thing, but its designation was the Triple XTC or something like that.
There was something like that. Yeah, I used to always get confused.
The Rally Weapon.
I used to get confused with them because they had funny names, the Losses. They were cool looking as well. They were cool looking. Because back at that point, we raced a lot of indoor polished floor with mini pins, and it was awesome. Did you two just see the picture I've just put into Skype chat?
I'll put that on on your Facebook profile. That's brilliant.
Yeah. So it was the Lossy, the TLR, the Lossy, the TC3. The Yokomo MR4BC.
HPI Pro 2.
The Pro 2. And I think Schumacher had it'd have been the Axis 2 at the time, just coming into the mission, just
That was great back then. It really was. Other than the TC3, which I raced for years, another model shop asked me to run the HPI Pro 4 when it came out, but I never got on with that car, and I gave up touring cars not very long after.
That was the one where the Pro 4 was the one where the motor was almost under the spur gear, wasn't it?
The belt came
down at a really funny angle to the front.
See, the TC3, you could bang a setup on that car and race it on carpet, polished floor, car park, concrete. It just worked everywhere.
Yeah. I've seen that post. You got a Marionville model stuff on as well.
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
They were my main sponsors for years and years. That's where my CML drive went through.
Yeah. Wasn't the American guy who ran that shop? Or was the American guy who was you speak to work there?
I think the owner was Italian.
Yeah.
It was a guy called, well, Ricardo was the son. Scott and Rick were the two guys that worked at the front of the shop. I still talk to them as well. Still in contact. Marionville, funnily enough, is now less than a mile from my house. They've moved. I live in Livingston these days. With the whole internet craze of selling stuff on the internet, the need for the model shop was less, so Marionville gave up their expensive shop in Edinburgh and moved to like just a small unit where you could still go in, but they're predominantly web order these days.
Class. Right, mate, do you want to thank anyone before you go? Friends, family, sponsors, long-suffering wife?
Absolutely. Obviously, my sponsors, which are S-Works, Absima. I've also got Totally Average Paint Jobs, 10RC, my dad pays for all my hotels when I got to Nationals and meetings, so I couldn't do that without my dad, and also my wife, who is very, very nice to let me go racing all the time and does not give me a hard time. So, nice. Thank you to all of them.
Brilliant. Thanks for coming on now. Good luck with your new cars, mate. Well, all right.
No problem at all. Thanks for having me, guys.
Cheers, man. Tra-tra. And I think I might have cut Alan off there just as he was saying goodbye, but no doubt we'll find out in the recording a bit later on. Anyway, he had
45 minutes of glory, so the extra second ain't going to matter, is it?
Oh, sorry. And our one-take podcast. I forgot to put that in. Class. So, did you brave the weather at the weekend?
What do you mean, brave it? It was lovely.
Well, yeah, it was right where I was as well, actually.
But... I would say Sunday. It was Sunday. It was. I mean, track was wet, but...
How was it? Oh, we were on yellow for the second round.
Sky was lovely.
Ooh. Go on. Anyway, let's talk about Telford first.
Mate, really good meeting. I was sort of committed to doing four-wheel drive outdoors through the winter. Just to make it easier, I can't be bothered. I've got my two-wheel drives prepped for carpet. The truck's prepped for any worksop I managed to get to, and the four-wheel drive's prepped for outdoors. So that's what's going to be ran, because I can't be bothered to keep swapping from setup to outdoor, carpet to outdoor. I can't be bothered. So, but literally, car felt great all day. A few minor changes, tweaks here and there. Really good. I think I had a couple of sixths in round, a seventh in round. I might have had a fifth in round, but it was really, car was really good. Felt great all day. Having great fun being lapped by Yardie. It was just really, really good fun. Nice chilled meeting. Pitting with our good friend and Mr. Potter. We have to call him Mr. Potter now. He was running two-wheel drive, pitting with the Saunders. Really, really good fun, just having a general nice day racing out in the sun. Track conditions stayed very similar all day. I managed to get away with just running one pair of silvers from the start of the day to the end of the day. And the car was just great. Really good. As you know, I've had some new body shells done. The pink on the front is a little bit more pink than I used to have. It used to be a bit more purple. But Christ, can you see this thing going around the track? It's like nuclear bright. It's awesome. So, But yeah, that was my racing weekend. Yeah, nothing special, but a great meeting all the same. Very well ran. Booked in for the second one already. About 40 people there.
How many 40 heats of four-wheel drive?
No, there was more than that. There was more than that because there was... So there was 21 four-wheel drives.
Yeah.
40 two-wheel drives. And a mixture of 10 vintage and trucks.
Oh, class. Did you make the
A? So there was... Yeah, I made the A. Started and finished eighth.
Oh, well done. Well done.
So, you know, which I was really pleased about. I know I joke about being lapped by Tom. It's inevitable. You know, it's going to happen. He's an awesome driver.
Yeah.
But for him to not just come past me like I was 100% stood still, you know, rather than just being a stationary chicane, at least I was a moving chicane for him.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just really good fun, actually, and being stood next to him on the rostrum, it was just a good laugh, you know. Very, very good day.
Yeah,
about it really. How did you and the boy Wonder get on?
Yeah, it was all right. Only Bruce raced. I'm going to do the Nigel Cross series this winter. Well, for eighth anyway. He's doing the Ledbury series and the Nigel Cross. But it's right. Ledbury, the first round of the winter series on Sunday. We missed the first round of qualifying because we've had a new car. So it's a new car to us, a B6.4. Sorry, a B6.4. A BRC8.
An RC8.
B4. Is what I meant. And we ran that and had a teething problem in the first round. Something that, you know what? I'd done the car in the week, been prepping it all, getting it all ready, and I'd seen a problem in the gearbox. And one of the gears was a bit worn on the diff pinion.
Yeah.
But it didn't feel that bad, so I shimmed it over. And on the bench, put the brakes on the car, and it felt really good. There was no problems. So I went out for practice, hit in end of the straight, hit the brakes, and the thing went... I was like, oh, no. So anyway, it was getting on for the start of the hit, for the first heat. So I took the car apart, had the pinion out the diff, and swapped all the gears around on the diff as well. And it just, one thing led to another. He missed the first heat. So we went out and on the second round it was still wet, and the third round it was dry. He put a good round in. There was 40 people there, and he had a 15th in round, so it was really good. Yeah, we went out in the fourth round and he had a cut on the last lap, so I put a new plug in the motor back in the pits, and I was revving it on the box and stuff, and it just didn't seem right, and I was like, well, I tell you what I'll do. I'll just put the spare engine in, and you know, because we're going to be doing practicing like this on Friday, actually, because it's half term and teacher training and all that sort of stuff. So,
yeah.
I thought I'll set the engine there, put the spare motor in, and we'll go from there. So he was polling the D final, which was a little bit low, but considering he only had one real decent run, because the first one it was wet, it was with a new car, and you know, we'd made changes to the car all the way through the day, and it was just getting better and better. And for the last round, I took the shocks in on the tower. I moved them in front and back, and it just transformed the car. It's really weird because he told me, he's quick enough to tell me when there's something wrong with it, but he can never put his finger on it. So I changed the shocks down, and the car looked a load better. So he went out in the final. He polled the D final. But he led that start to finish and won that by about 12 seconds. Which was, you know, it was quite good.
Decent,
he was happy. I tell you what, he's such a prima donna, my boy. I put this other engine, the spare engine in, and I ran it in at the start of the year. It was a Fast Tracks Enduro. This is before we got that little bit of sponsorship with Alpha, and I ran it in at the start of the year, and I'm like, right, that's done. It's set up. It's ready to go. I know it's not going to be as powerful as what we're racing with, but if the world ends, I can chuck this motor in. I know it's going to run, and it's going to run for a final or two or a day if it needs to, you know.
Yeah, get you through.
So anyway, he sat there in the box. So get it out. I was so tough with myself. I always talk about this, you know, having a spare engine on, mounts and air filter on and exhaust ready to go. So I dropped this engine in, and he went round and came onto the straight for the first time in the warm-up, and you know what he said? He says off the rostrum, well, this thing's got no power. And I'm like... dude, you know, you're running, you know, that's it. We're just going to have to deal with it. Yeah. And then he's like...
Well, your other one, your response should have been, it's got more power than your other engine has at the minute.
Yeah. I'm like, look, we're going to have to run this. This is what we've got. And anyway, he comes around the lap, and has he even got the power to clear the triples? And he was right, it didn't. You know, so anyway,
I think that'll do him some good in the long run, though, learning how to drive a car that's not optimal.
This was it. The thing was running, it was pulling all right, and it didn't stop him from winning the final. So we ran the final. I mean, to be honest, although I said I'd run it in at the start of the season to use as a spare, it went rich halfway through the race, so I'm thinking maybe it wasn't as running as I thought it was.
Yeah.
So, but... same again, in hindsight, looking back, I'm thinking I probably could have, we had that much of a lead, I could have bought him in and leaned it off a bit and sent him back out again.
Yeah.
But I didn't, but like I said, you know, so I got it back in after the D final, and I got it in the pit lane. I was revving the knackers off it, trying to, you can do this thing called a lean bog with an engine, Chris, and you can, you know, you rev it up, let it relax, rev it up, let it relax, and then basically when the third time you pull it, if it goes, it means it's too lean and there's no fuel in the engine. Yeah, so basically you keep doing this and to keep winding the screw in to get it to lean bog. Yeah, and then once you've got to that point, you take it back a little bit and then do your three revs again and see if it's still got fuel in the engine. Yeah. So anyway, did this, sent him back out for the warm for the next one, and it was a load faster down the straight. Loads faster. Still couldn't clear the triple, but it was loads faster. So anyway, he was happy with this. And then unfortunately, second lap in, I mean, he was off ninth because of the bump up, so he was running around in ninth, and then he crashed at the end of the straight. Now, I'm a big believer in, you know, if you crash and you have to be marshalled, it's your own fault, yeah. But unfortunately, the marshal on point number one had his head in race control talking to the race director. So,
right.
So Bruce was on his roof for, it felt like 20 seconds. It was probably five. You know
what
I mean?
Would you like to name and shame this marshal?
No, he's only your kid. I ain't going to do it.
If it was an adult.
Old enough to marshal, but yeah. Anyway, it was heartbreaking because although he was ninth, he was still in the, what do you call it? I suppose the chain of cars. You know, you're still at the back of the row of cars. Yeah, the chain.
Like the DRS train.
Yeah. So anyway, yeah. So that was it. He had a lonely run round in ninth, but he finished the race. So. You know, so the engine did good. Yeah, the spare engine did good. So, yeah.
What was the new car like to work on versus the old one?
You know what? There's not. It's weird. It's like the front top wishbones are shorter. And the wishbone, or the wishbones are different on the car and stuff like that. But yeah, it's the same. The gearbox.
It feels like there's loads of differences, but then there's not really any differences.
Yeah, if you want to take the diff cover off to get to the diff, it's still the same. It's still four screws in the anti-roll bar. You know what I mean? It's just there's no.
Yeah,
it's just a different car, and then the bolt parts won't cross over, but it's just the same to work on. But no, we had a class day, absolutely class day, and it was pretty good. You know, as much as, you know, we always talk about me retiring and stuff like that. I think he's nearly there, isn't it? But when I see him getting better, and I make a change to his car, and it goes better, you know, whether he sees it or not from the rostrum, or you know, I don't know, you know, whether you normally complain that he was in the bushes or something like that. But for me to see the car go better and see him carry a bit more speed in, or you know, it was good, it was really good.
Yeah. So wholesome family content. Are you now getting to the point where you're probably getting more satisfaction out of seeing him do better than you racing
now? Well, yeah, it's 50-50. It's 50-50, mate. Because sometimes I'm like literally sat at, like at Nemo a couple of weeks ago. I was sat at my table pulling my hair out thinking, if I was here, I'd probably be in the back of the A final. And here I am watching you qualify last in the bottom final when I know you can do better. Yeah. But, you know, like I say, I don't...
You'll always have that thing, though, because we're racers at heart, aren't we?
I know, yeah.
You know, but you're always going to want to get in the car. It's like when you watch interviews with, like, the old F1 drivers, and they're like, I'd love to be in that.
Yeah, and I'd like, have done that. I'd have done this, yeah.
So, yeah, and it's like, yeah. You're never going to lose that will to be a racer. That's never going.
Yeah.
It's just...
No, we'll get there. I mean, his consistency is pretty good. He doesn't need marshalling that much. Some of his lines are a bit take a lot to be loved. But yeah,
they're inventive.
We'll get in there. You know, it's like our mate Stu. He was in the B final, and I'm like, Stu's about the same pace as Bruce at practice and normally, But yes, Bruce was in the, although he had polled the D, so he was only one place off the, you know. But yeah, it was just unfortunate. But it's weird that Bruce doesn't seem to get qualifying. You know, he doesn't get it at all.
It's because he's a kid and he's just race.
You put him in that final, and I'm like, Bruce, that car, the six corners away from you, if you want to bump up, you've got to catch and pass him. You'll be like, all right, watch this. And he does it. But to say to him, you got to do 9 laps as good as you can without crashing, as close to the apex as you can, and don't get involved with any races with any other cars. He's like, but I like racing. I like being in with the cars. I'm like, I know, but you can't do that. You need to concentrate on not crashing and getting around. Yeah,
you need to get out of the way.
Yeah, so it's mad. It's mad. But he's all right, man. Yeah. I feel like I'm going on. But, you know, I suppose that's what we're here for. Where are you racing next?
Well, I'm not for a couple of weeks because it's that big weekend now, isn't it?
Oh, the AGM this weekend, isn't it?
Yeah, it's the AGM now. So it's very, very important. A lot of people will have noticed, they've had, potentially, hopefully, a lot of people have noticed that they've had a lot of emails today. This is a list, obviously, some of the meetings are open for people to vote online. Some of them are vote only in person but are streamed, and some of them are only in person. So, for example, our one, the 10th scale meeting, that is what's called a hybrid meeting. So you can watch it online, but you can't vote online this year. That's going to be trialled by the 10th on-road section and the exec section. If you want to watch it or you want to vote in it for the exec meeting or the 10th on road, if you're so inclined to be at being that class, you need to register. There's a link in your email. So make sure you do that, because you don't want to potentially be having to do that last minute and miss your vote possibly. AGM starts 1 o'clock Saturday for the exec AGM. Most people, although it is quite interesting, will only be interested in the meetings for their specific section.
Yeah.
So they're on the Sunday. It's a two-day AGM this weekend. I will just let you guys know that the BRCA 1/10 off-road section, I'll let you guys know that because you're obviously the majority of the listeners. That will start at 9:30 in the morning. So the plan is to get through the day quickly. There are some proposals. You can view them online. If you've got any thoughts, you want to have your say, make your way down to the AGM for 9:30 on Sunday.
Cool. So, you know, you say some things you can vote on online and some things you can't.
Some sections you can vote for.
So, but, you know, the 10th section, you're not allowed to vote online.
Yes.
Can you still have your say, or have you got to be in the room?
No, it's a streamed only.
So it's listen only.
You'll be able to watch. I think you can watch because we're using the BRCA's EWL system, which is like the camera that it floats to whoever's talking. It's quite clever.
Skype does that.
Sorry. So, but you've got to have a camera that does that. So the camera's in the middle of the room. Whoever's talking, you'll see them on the screen.
Oh, that's cool. That's clever. Yeah.
So this year for the 10th section, we decided to go with a streamed only. The platform's not really been tested for the hybrid, the vote online one. So we thought let the guys that want to have it do that, like the exec meeting. So you can vote online for the exec meeting. You can put your hand up. You can have your say. I think you can only vote. I don't think you can talk on it from home. If you want to put a proposal forward, you should have done that a while ago anyway.
Yeah,
5 weeks ago, 4.5 weeks ago. So you have to, if you want to say turn up, but, you know, if you can turn up, I know for some people it's a bit of a trek. Please do, because everybody's opinion is like massively, massively important to this hobby. This is a member-led section, like the whole BRCA is, the rules are made and voted for by the members. It's the only way we can get your feedback, really, is to have you at the AGMs and having your opinions put forward in the guise of proposals. So come down, you know, if you feel like you can do one of the positions, put your hand up and stand for one of the positions and explain why you think you can do it. It's a great opportunity. You learn a hell of a lot. I have over the last year. I found it's given me a better understanding of how the hobby works internally and externally. So yeah, I can't really say anything else. Come to the AGM if you can.
Yeah.
If you can't, watch it.
I think I'll be watching online, so I ain't got any travel, Bruce. So, but we'll see. We'll see.
I'll bring him with you.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can lock him in my hotel room
with his iPad. Just, the best.
Yeah. Just. Well, no, I'll leave I'll leave the Xbox. I'm going to take the Xbox for the night. So we'll lock him in there. Just bag of grapes and a bottle of squash. Should be fine.
That's allowed by law, you know.
It's only not allowed if they're fined out. It's not like we're talking about it with thousands of people.
Speaking like a true bloke who hasn't got kids.
You know.
Class.
Down to the law. Yeah. I mean, Christ, you can leave a dog in a car if you crack the window.
Yeah. All right. Let me save you from yourself and ask you to thank the sponsors.
So, as always, a massive thank you to CML Distribution, to Schumacher Racing, and to Will Speed RC. Another year being supported by these great companies, hopefully more to come. And again, like I said previously, if you're interested in sponsoring the show, get in touch if you want to be known every week by us two talking about you.
Yeah, globally. And don't leave your kids unattended in a hotel room. Anyway, guys, thanks very much for listening. Thanks for your messages of support. We love to read each and every one. And hopefully we will see you next week, or you'll listen to us next week, I think is what I meant. That's it. Good night. God bless. Have a safe journey home. If you are driving, don't forget your car. If you've got your kids with you, please don't forget to take them with you. Chris, fantastic. If I don't see you the weekend, I'll be watching you on the internet.
I'll see you soon.
Good luck with the IDM, bro.
See you later, mate. Bye-bye.